What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 379 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the program on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along on Facebook and X for the latest updates. Good to be back with you folks this week. Maybe a little bit of a shorter episode with not a whole lot of news to get through, but should be a good episode today. Looking forward to getting into some Celtics, some Bruins, little Red Sox. We'll be taking a look at Super Bowl 59 as well. And then also got a good Celtics-themed top five at the end of the program. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Before we get going, we'd like to say thanks to Evan Griesing for coming on guest Friday last week. Great episode if you have not listened to it already. Good. And talking some Red Sox offseason, getting Evan's take on some of the offseason moves that the Red Sox have made. We'll be talking a little bit of Red Sox on today's program as the truck made its way from, or is currently making its way down to Fort Myers. Truck day was yesterday at Fenway. Get to a little Red Sox as spring training is, a couple weeks away, and, spring training opener is less than 3 weeks away, so we'll get into some Red Sox. Obviously, we got some Bruins and Celtics. No Patriots today, really not any new news. Revolution, obviously, their season is coming up soon in a couple of weeks, so we'll have more Revs talk as they get closer. I believe that they're entrenched in some preseason games at the moment. So we're going to get started with the Celtics today. I think it pretty apropos with the Celtics matching up with the Cavaliers tonight in Cleveland. Pretty big matchup, obviously. The Cavs are still the number one team in the Eastern Conference. Celtics and Cavs have played two games this season previously. Both close games, Celtics winning one in Boston, Cavaliers winning the other in Cleveland. So be a good, matchup kind of game, statement game for the Celtics. And, I think for me, I always say that statement games are statement games, or are not statement games unless you win. So I think it's a huge opportunity for the Celtics. And I think coming off of last week, in which I think a frustrating loss to Houston, but the Celtics did a great job of, rebounding, getting some wins in the last three games, three-game winning streak, the first time since I think early December that they've won three in a row. And I think maybe finally look like they're starting to break out of kind of the mid-season slump, malaise, whatever you want to say. And it seems like, especially with the huge comeback win over the Sixers on Sunday night, the Celtics, I think, finally appear to be, hopefully getting back on the right track. I think especially with offensively, what you saw shooting the ball, especially in the second half against Philly. But I think for this team, it's, big games like this are huge, that it can kind of, get your energy level up. And I think going on the road in an environment that, can be hostile and can be tough, I think it's going to be a good test. And I think, just knowing, if the Celtics end up with the number two seed in the East and have to play a team like Cleveland in the playoffs, in a winner go home game seven, games like this, can be important to kind of see where you stack up. So it should be a good game tonight. Should be a really close game. I think the Celtics are finally, in a place where it seems like, Porzingis has worked his way consistently back into the lineup. And the Celtics have worked out ways to, get him involved, whether it's, feeding him early for three-pointers early in games, or, fixing certain matchups for him, in the post so that he can take advantage of smaller defenders, I think is huge, because I think it allows the Celtics to have different ways to attack defenses. And I think specifically Cleveland's defense, it's important to have, different ways that you can attack, because Cleveland, I think, one of the better defensive teams in the league, especially in the interior. And I think the Celtics need to find the different ways to attack them, you know, whether it's attacking the basket, you know, pulling extra defenders, or, you know, looking for open shots and hitting open shots. The Celtics, I think, obviously, in the last couple of weeks haven't done the best job at, you know, hitting those open threes. But it seemed like second half against Philly, it really kind of, the tide seemed to turn, you know, that it was like they were missing all these shots in the first half. The Sixers were making all the shots, and then it kind of, you know, kind of evened out. But I think for the Celtics tonight, you know, it's gonna sound like very simple, but I think knocking down threes and knocking down shots is gonna be really, really important, because they may not have the easiest time attacking inside. I think when you consider Allen and Mobley and the, you know, big defenders that they are, that I think it may not be as simple as, you know, JT and JB attacking the basket. We always want them to, absolutely. But I think being able to have different ways to attack the Cleveland defense is going to be huge. But I'm very much looking forward to this game tonight. I really think it could be a really good, you know, battle of two heavyweights in the East, you know, which it is, the top two teams in the East. And I think, you know, just for standings wise, you know, the Celtics are, I think, 4.5 games out of first. We'll take a look at the standings later in the program, but I think winning a head-to-head matchup, they also have another head-to-head matchup at the end of February in Boston that, you know, Celtics take both of those games, could have an outside chance at getting that number one seed. So another reason why this game tonight is really, really important. But, you know, Cleveland's obviously no pushover. They've been excellent this year defensively. You know, Mitchell and Garland are always really good as a duo. And it always seems like there's a bench guy or some, you know, person that you don't expect to go off in these types of games. So I think the Celtics need to be, you know, at their best defensively. I think that's kind of where it starts, you know, being successful is playing with that, you know, energy and that focus defensively. And I think that's why they were able to get back in the game on Sunday. You know, obviously, I've talked about, you know, they were able to get back in the game because they were making threes and making them at a high rate. But the, I think, defensive level was raised. The Celtics did a better job of, you know, stopping the ball and being more aggressive and just being more focused. I know that sounds, you know, so simple, but it's like sometimes you watch this team defensively and you can clearly tell that the level is not where it needs to be, but you could clearly identify that, you know, late in the third quarter or early fourth quarter when the Celtics made that run. You know, it was unbelievable that they were down, you know, 26 points with like 3 minutes left in the third quarter, cut it down to 14 before the end of the fourth or before the end of the third, and, you know, took the lead midway through the fourth. So I think it just shows you that I think it's kind of simple for this team sometimes when it's just the matter of raising your defensive level and competing harder. And, you know, I know this team has had some issues with that in the last couple of weeks, you know, maybe even the last 2 months, if you want to stretch it out that far. But I really do think that they kind of have started to turn the corner. Obviously, you know, I think they should have closed out the game better in New Orleans on Friday night. You know, obviously, it was awesome to see Jason Tatum knock down that clutch shot. You know, we've seen him a lot of times trying to do too much in those clutch situations, but I think he did exactly what the situation called for, calmly drilled the game-winning shot. And so I think that was good to see that go down. It wasn't great to see the Celtics not be able to close out the game and miss a number of free throws. Granted, there were a number of missed calls, I think, as well, but you would have liked them to finish out the game better so that they didn't have to rely on a, you know, tough Jason Tatum shot to win the game. Obviously, I'm excited that he made the shot. That was huge, but you would have liked that game to not be as close. You would have liked for them to be able to, you know, kind of take Trey Murphy out of the game, and he kind of kept making shots, and it didn't seem like there was too much being done to kind of take the ball out of his hands or, double team him, things like that. And I think, Sunday, just for comparison, you saw Tyrese Maxey going crazy in the first half. He had, I think he had like 20 points in the first quarter, but I think, or it was something like he had 23 points in the first half, but only scored 11 in the second half. So they did a better job containing him. And it just seems strange that, Trey Murphy is this guy that always plays well against the Celtics for the Pelicans and just kept making shots. And, the Celtics, I think, at times were competing and he kind of just was making crazy shots. But, he went for 40 points in that game on Friday night. And, luckily the Celtics were able to make enough plays down the stretch. Tatum making that basket. Jaylen Brown made a shot as well in the last minute. So you would have liked for that game to not be as close, but I think then they did a great job closing out Sunday's game. Jrue Holiday making that big three-pointer. Tatum obviously was huge in the second half. Had 35, 36 in that Sixers game. So, I think definitely some good things from those games. But I think, three straight wins is a really good positive sign for this team. I think going through the period that they've gone through, and now, trade deadline is this week, NBA All-Star weekend is coming up, and I think the Celtics will have an ability to, focus on something, get to the break and then be able to kind of reset, because I do think that a lot of the Celtics struggles for the last couple of weeks had a lot to do with the fact that it was kind of just the middle of the season, kind of the dog days of the season. And I know that, the Celtics are a championship team and they have these expectations and, people expect them to play at their best every single night. I just personally, I don't think that that's possible to expect every single night, even with a team that's as talented as the Celtics. It's kind of just going to be what it's going to be. But I do think that, being a little bit more, healthier with Porzingis being regularly in the lineup and regularly playing a lot of minutes has, helped this team offensively. So you kind of hope it just continues and, hopefully it's a game tonight that the Celtics can continue to build off of the positive momentum that they had second half in Philadelphia. So should be a really good game tonight. Very excited. Celtics do not have anybody on the injury report. Cavaliers, Dean Wade and Isaac Okoro will not be playing in this game. But, I think big time win or big time game, Celtics and Cavs. Cavs going for their fifth straight win. Celtics going for their fourth straight win. Celtics are 19-6 away from the Garden, and Cavaliers are 24-3 in Cleveland. So that will be a really good game on the schedule tonight. So the Celtics will then, it's the last game of a quick road trip, and then I think they're coming home for a couple games. But yeah, I think really impressed with the second half against the Sixers, obviously. So yeah, a couple interesting games. Actually, probably makes sense to go through the rest of these games before the All-Star break. Celtics have five more games this week. They're in Cleveland tonight. They will host the Mavericks on Thursday. There's a lot that we're going to talk about with the Mavericks later in the program, but that will be interesting to see the Mavericks again. A finals rematch, if you want to say that, or the second finals rematch, if you want to say that. And then the Celtics will have a quick road trip. They'll go to New York on Saturday night, 8:30 start against the Knicks, and then they'll be in Miami on Monday night next week, and then Wednesday next week they'll host Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs, and that will be their final game before the All-Star break. So five games to go for the Celtics, but I think very pleased with Tatum and Porzingis the last couple of games. I think really starting to, Porzingis in particular, I think getting into the groove of being back regularly, I think has been huge. And I think it's helped this team be a little bit more, consistent offensively, as I talked about. But yeah, big one tonight in Cleveland. 7:30 start on TNT tonight for the Celtics. So I think, well, actually, it probably makes sense to touch on the trade deadline for the Celtics. I'm not expecting that you're going to see a move for this team. I think just with the salary implications of, adding another player, does it really make sense? And, obviously, if you're going to add somebody on a 15th roster spot, is that person really going to contribute much to the team going forward? I could see the Celtics moving somebody like Jaden Springer. I think just based on the fact that it seems like he's played a lot more recently, and I'm almost wondering if, it's a showcase, so to speak. It's kind of like a showcase that possibly, are they looking to move him? I think he's really the only possible guy that they could trade. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that the Celtics are pretty comfortable with the team that they have, so I wouldn't expect that they do anything, before now and Thursday. But I think obviously it'll be important to pay attention to what some of the other, rival teams in the East do, just to kind of pay attention to if other teams, do anything to improve their roster. But I wouldn't expect the Celtics to be doing anything major this week. So I think that's going to be it for the Celtics. We're going to move on and talk Bruins. I think as we kind of left off last week's show, I was feeling a little bit more confident about the Bruins, and then things did not go well last week for the most part, and the Bruins are kind of just still in a spot where it's hard to establish what their identity is, and it's hard to take them seriously. I think especially when you consider that they had won, five out of seven coming into a road game against Buffalo last week, and you felt kind of good. You felt, okay, they've started to kind of string together some wins. Goaltending's been better. You've gotten some good goal scoring. Pastrnak and Geeky are starting to, really start to come on. And then you drop a stinker in Buffalo, a place that the Bruins usually do really, really well. And usually Buffalo is a team that the Bruins can kind of just easily impose their will. And it's kind of just a sleepy game, usually, when they play Buffalo. But that was not the case. The Bruins just didn't play with the defensive level that was necessary, and the Sabres just kept scoring and kept scoring, and the Bruins kept, making the same defensive mistakes and, kind of leaving Swayman out to dry on some plays. But it just, unfortunately, I think for this team, it's too much of like not good enough, and you kind of don't know what team you're going to get night in and night out, because it's like you look at a team like Buffalo, basement of the Eastern Conference, one of the worst teams in the league. Sure, they have some offensive talent, absolutely. Tage Thompson, I think one of the most underrated young players in the league, can, is capable of doing anything in a game offensively. And I don't know, it just felt like that should have been the game that the Bruins come into, kind of set the tone and kind of, continue to kind of build off of the positive play that they had had over the last, week and a half prior. And, Mason Lorai gets that first goal, and you're like, okay, this is great, early lead for the Bruins. And all too often, this team can't stay focused. They give up a goal right after they score, which has been a huge bugaboo for them all season long. Ty Anderson, I think, has kept a tally of times that the Bruins have scored and then given up a goal within the next minute or something like that. And it's pretty staggering, if you look at that. And it's just, unfortunately, I think as much as we talk about this team not really having an identity all season, unfortunately, like, that's their identity. Like, the negative stuff is their identity, and that's never good when you're a team that's entrenched in a playoff chase and, trying to do everything they can to make the postseason. But it's like, you look at stuff like that, you look at their goal differential, it's the worst in the league of any team that's like in playoff contention. I have to look specifically, but it's like a minus 26, and it's just a team that just feels like there's too many flaws to overcome. That, as we talk about, the goal scoring is not consistent enough. As much as, you've gotten some good play from Pastrnak, you've gotten, Geeky and Zaka, you've gotten that line to work into stuff. Patra's been doing well, but it's like there's not enough consistency for this team on a night-to-night basis offensively. There's not enough consistency defensively. Still making a lot of the same errors. Special teams, as much as the power plays, scored some goals in the last couple of games, still just not where it needs to be in the penalty kill, not where it needs to be in the goaltending, I think, leaves a little bit to be desired. And it's not to say that Swayman's been bad, but I think that there are times where, you need saves, and it kind of goes back to the giving up goals, right after you score. And it just tells me that this is a team that just is not doing a good enough job of being focused, and kind of don't really know what the fix of that is, because they've changed the coach, and nothing's really changed. Are they slightly better with Joe Sacco? I think so. I'm not sure what this specific record is, but I know it's over 500, but it's not by much. And it's just like, the team's identity is their identity at this point. It almost seems like we're just waiting for them to, either bottom out completely or go on a run where you win 10 out of 12 or something. But this team's too inconsistent to hope for something positive, unfortunately. And it stinks. It stinks to sit here and talk about the Bruins like this, because usually I'm a person that is pretty optimistic about this team and, their resiliency. They've always been able to be a group that rebounds when things get bad, but it's just like, it doesn't really seem like, it's like every time things get, kind of rock bottom or whatever, sure, they come back and have a good game, but then it's not, sustained. And I feel like that's what happened this past week, that the Bruins get smoked in Buffalo, come back home and get, demolished in the third period against Winnipeg. And it's just, to me, nothing is more clear about this team's like lack of focus than the third period against Winnipeg. Bruins trail 2-1 after the first period. And then Elias Lindholm scores a shorthanded goal, right off of a faceoff, like 11 seconds into the third period. And you're like, all right, this is great. Bruins have tied the game on a shorthanded goal. They should be able to build off that momentum, play a great third period. And the opposite happened. Bruins allow a power play goal. Seconds later, Winnipeg scores again after that. And the game just kind of gets out of hand. And it's just, this team just has not had the ability to string together, good momentum. And it's not to say that it happens every single game, because clearly the Bruins were able to build off of some good momentum against the Rangers, getting that power play goal in the first period. And I think they were really in control for the majority of that game against the Rangers, which is good. But it's like that consistency and that level, is hard to come by for some reason. I think there's rare games this season where you can look at and say, okay, they play their absolute best for 60 minutes. This is the team that we expect. And, as frustrating as it is, I think that's what Saturday's game was. That you look at that and say, hey, that's the way that they need to play. Why haven't they been able to play this way all season? And it's kind of just, it's a mystery. It's kind of been a mystery all season long that, the team has just, not been able to stay focused, not been able to, build momentum. And so that's where it's hard to feel really excited about that Saturday game because it's kind of like you almost expect them to, lose three in a row after that. And the rest of the week's not going to be easy. Bruins got a back-to-back starting tonight, hosting the Wild, and then they'll be in New York to play the Rangers on Wednesday, and then they'll host the Golden Knights on Saturday. It's their final game before the break for the Four Nations face-off. So, I think it's, you want to be hopeful, you want to be optimistic, but it's kind of difficult when, like I said, you win 5 out of 7. And then, you lose two games by a combined score of 13-4. And it's just like, where's that level of consistency? And it's just, not where it needs to be. It's good that you're seeing David Pastrnak and, Morgan Geekie really pick up their games, but you've not seen a lot of consistency from, anybody else. It's good to see Charlie McAvoy back. Good to see him scoring a power play goal and, shooting the puck on the power play. Don't mean to say that in a negative way, but it's just like it frustrates me when he scores goals like that because you know that he can. You know that he has the ability. He has a great shot. He just doesn't use it as much as he should. And it's frustrating because it's like he could be a really good power play quarterback, but for some reason, it just has that reluctance of shooting the puck, and that kind of, bothered some people that he got put back on the number one power play after, Lowry had a period of being on that unit and I think performing pretty well. It's good to see him score. Obviously, it's great. The power play seems to be playing a little bit better, which is good, but it's just like those goals by Charlie seem to come few and far between, where it's like, you see that goal, you see the talent that he has. Like he has the ability to score literally at all times. So it's good to see him back. I think the Bruins were hoping that Lindholm could return before the Four Nations face-off. Don't believe that that's going to happen. So, in all likelihood, you're going to see him, when the Bruins come back in late February. Also been really impressed with Matt Patra lately. Had a couple assists in the Rangers game after taking a big hit. So good to see him bounce back. Really, really like the way that he plays. So that at least gives you hope for the future with this Bruins team, but it's kind of hard to find the positives right now when they're entrenched in the position that they are with a bunch of teams ahead of them, a couple teams behind them that are breathing down their necks. Just his all these games going forward, however many games they have left, you're gonna have to be treating these like playoff games. I think I'm not super confident about this team going forward, but I think if it's possible that they can maybe find a little bit of momentum in the next three games and then come back from the long break and be ready to, push themselves. Who knows? Crazy things have happened, but as I said, it's a team that's had a very hard time this season finding that level of consistency and, sticking to it for a period of time. So we'll see how the next three games goes. As we said, Bruins and Wild tonight at 7, and they will travel to New York, play the Rangers at 7 o'clock tomorrow, and then Vegas 3:30 start on Saturday at the Garden, and then the Bruins will be off for 2 weeks exactly, and then they'll be back February 22nd for the stretch run. So we'll see what happens there. So I think it's going to be it for the Bruins. We're going to talk a little Red Sox. I as the truck with all the equipment and supplies left from Fenway to Fort Myers yesterday. Obviously, Evan Griesing and I talked at length about the Red Sox offseason and kind of where we kind of expect the team to be this season, but figured it made sense to, talk a little Red Sox and kind of different things that I'm looking forward to for spring training. Obviously there's the stuff that Evan and I talked about with Alex Bregman and, whether the Red Sox would make a decision to sign him. I do think that it's worth monitoring. I think especially with spring training getting as close as it's getting, does he become a player that sees that his market is not quite what he thought it would be, and maybe he signs a smaller deal, if he signs a 1 or 2 year deal or something like that. Not saying that's going to happen, but it may possibly. And so I think, as it gets closer to spring training, price may come down. And so I'm wondering if the Red Sox possibly could make it work if, he realizes that his market is coming down, that, doesn't get signed or whatnot. So I think that will be something to worth monitor to be worth monitoring. But I think honestly, outside of that, like the team that they have right now is probably the team that they start the season with. Obviously, there's always possibility that you see a trade in spring training. Seen that happen many times. But I think for the most part, the team that they have is going to be the team that they have. And I think for me, the biggest question is second base. Is there a battle between Vaughn Grissom and Christian Campbell? What do the Red Sox think happens there? Very curious to see that particular position battle. But I think really, all the other position spots are going to be the guys that you expect. Connor Wong behind the plate, Casas at first, Devers at third, Story at shortstop, and then, whoever at second base, outfield. I think Abreu's there. I think Duran's there. Rafaela, I think, is there. And then what happens is somebody like Roman Anthony. Does he have a good spring training? Does he make it difficult for the Red Sox to make a decision in the outfield? Does he stick around? I think likely Yoshida will be around. Possibly, maybe there's a trade with him. I wouldn't be surprised. But I also think they probably want to see what he can do this season after last season. Missed a lot of time with injury. But personally, I think the pitching staff and the starting rotation in the bullpen, pretty set. And I think a spot that you should feel pretty confident about with, getting Crochet, with getting Buehler, see what Giolito has if he starts pitching. And I think they've done a good job of addressing that pitching staff because it takes pressure off of Bello and Hauk and Crawford, three guys that I think are pretty solid starters, but I think fortifying the rotation was the best thing that they could do. So I think in terms of things to watch, I think you talk about Campbell and Anthony, two, high-level prospects that I think are, probably going to get a lot of opportunities in spring training. Definitely would keep your eye on both of those guys. But I think other than that, like the lineup's probably going to be about the same. You're crossing your fingers that guys can stay healthy in camp and guys come into camp in good shape. And, there's some hope around this team. And I think there should be, even if the Red Sox make the decision to not sign, Bregman, whether he's, joining the team or not, that I think you can still have the ability to, feel somewhat excited about this team this year, that, hopefully they can stay healthy. I think really, if they do, I think they really have a pretty good chance at a wild card spot, even without acquiring somebody like Bregman. I think that they have a very good chance to be competitive, in the American League. So I think, we'll obviously talk about this as the season gets closer, but I think currently constructed, there's no reason to think that this team couldn't win, 86 to 87 games and be challenging for that one of those wild card spots. So the Red Sox spring training schedule starts February 21st against Northeastern, and then they'll have games against Tampa Bay, Toronto, New York, Atlanta, Tampa Bay again, and then Detroit, Philadelphia that first week of games. So I think that's probably gonna do it for the Red Sox. I think as we get closer to spring training and into spring training, I'll obviously keep you all updated as to, what's going on. And obviously, if there's any more free agent activity or trade activity, we will certainly let you know. So I think it's going to do it for the Boston teams. If you were if you're into the bean pot like me, you were watching a couple college hockey games last night with BU dominating Harvard and BC dominating Northeastern college hockey. So always get excited to watch the bean pot, but it didn't seem like either of those games yesterday were terribly competitive. BU winning 7-1, BC winning 8-2. Championship will be next Monday, so we'll keep you updated a little bit on that. But always an exciting tournament to watch in Boston. Just the tradition and all that, kind of stinks that the games were competitive, but I do expect that championship between BU and BC to be competitive. First time that the two teams have faced off in the final since 2016. So definitely something to keep your eye on in terms of Boston sports with the championship next Monday night. So I think we're going to talk Super Bowl 59. I think would make sense to do a little preview here with the Eagles and the Chiefs. Obviously we're a Boston-based podcast, but I think it would make sense to give my take on this game. I do think that it's going to be close. I don't really see this game being a blowout. The Chiefs are favored by a point and a half matchup predictor on ESPN, according to their analytics, as the Eagles 56% to the Chiefs 44%. So I think that both things tell you that it's going to be a close game. I do think it's really going to come down to, taking care of the football. It's going to be huge. I think for the Eagles in particular, they've had some games this year where they're a little loose with the football, but I think that, a team that has a guy like Jalen Hurts is always going to be motivated to play in games like this. And I think this team, the Eagles, certainly motivated based on, the loss that they had to the Chiefs a couple years ago. I do think that the Eagles are one of the better teams equipped to beat the Chiefs. I think you just look at what Saquon Barkley has done this postseason and some of the issues that the Chiefs have had defending the run. So I do think that the Eagles have to be establishing the run early and often in this game, but they also need to be able to, have a balance. And I think it's a great sign for the Eagles to get last game to get AJ Brown involved in the passing game, because I think that's going to be really important. Yes, the Chiefs, very, very good against the pass. But I think for the Eagles to get into an offensive rhythm, throwing and passing is going to be key for them to win. If the Eagles can throw the ball effectively, I don't know that there's a way that they can lose this game. I know that might sound crazy, but I think I'm very confident in the Eagles' offensive ability if they're able to move the ball through the air and on the ground. It's just hope that that balance is where it needs to be and it's not the Eagles trying to do too much in the pass game, because I feel like that sometimes has happened with them this season. It's like you got to remember that you got Saquon Barkley back there. I think if he plays that final game of the regular season, he probably breaks the single season rushing record. So they got to feed him the ball. I felt like watching the AFC Championship, The Bills did not do a good enough job of giving the ball to James Cook more than they should have, and kind of was like they relied on Josh Allen a little bit too much in the run game. So I think the Eagles got to be able to lean on Barkley in this game. As far as the Chiefs, I think Mahomes is going to do what he's going to do. The Eagles have to get to him. If you look at historically when the Chiefs have won in Super Bowls, Mahomes is relatively has relatively clean pockets. If you look at the Super Bowl that he did lose against the Buccaneers a couple of years ago, he did not have the ability to do anything in that pocket. Like the Bucs were in the backfield consistently. The Eagles have to be able to do that. And I think it's Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis on the interior. I think that's going to be huge in this game. And making sure, and the Eagles have to make sure that they are, disciplined, keeping the edge as well. It drives me crazy when teams play the Chiefs and can't, control the edge. And Mahomes just escapes and runs for 18 yards. Eagles have to be, disciplined in that area. The Chiefs are a team that the wide receiver talent probably isn't going to blow you away, but they find ways to, get creative. And so I think the Eagles have to be, disciplined, have to be ready for anything. I have my concerns about Nick Sirianni, the Eagles coach, that feel like sometimes he can get in the way of their success. But I think given that this team has lost to the Chiefs before in this kind of game, it kind of gives them an idea of, okay, try not to make the same mistakes as they did last time. So, as much as I've been talking up the Eagles and talking about how much I really like them in this game, I just, there's something that tells me that there's going to be some kind of coaching mistake that happens where, Sirianni is going to make a big time mistake and the Chiefs are going to take advantage of it. The Eagles are very lucky in that divisional game against the Rams that they were trying to run out the clock for some reason. They call a pass play on second down. They're not able to run out the clock, give the ball back to the Rams, and they drive down the field. Obviously, they don't win the game, but it's just like things like that. Can't do that against the Chiefs. So I'd love to pick the Eagles. I just think it's the Chiefs' opportunity to win three in a row, and I think they're going to do it. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. 22 to 19 is kind of what I feel. I think it's going to be, the over-under is 49 and a half. I think it's going to be the under, but I think the Chiefs win. And hopefully I'm wrong. I'd like to see the Eagles get it done, especially after coming up short in the previous time against the Chiefs, but there's not really anything logical about how the Chiefs have been winning games this year. So it's like, as much as logic tells me that the Eagles are going to win, it's hard for me to sit here and pick them. But I do think we're going to have a really, really good game. So very much looking forward to it. Sunday, 6:30 on Fox, Chiefs and the Eagles from New Orleans. So I think, get to some notes here. Myles Garrett has requested a trade from the Cleveland Browns. So that was kind of interesting the other day. Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie was rumored to be interested in buying the Celtics, but that rumor ended up being just a rumor. So that will not be happening. I did think that was kind of interesting. And it's been reported that the Rams are shopping Cooper Kupp despite him wishing to stay with the Rams. So we'll see what happens with both of those players, Myles Garrett and Cooper Kupp. So we're going to take a look some NBA notes here. Obviously, going to get to the big trades that happened. Obviously, Saturday night, the big trade between the Lakers and the Mavericks, I would say, personally, one of the most shocking trades that I've ever, seen, with the Lakers sending Anthony Davis to the Mavericks for Luka Doncic. Really still cannot believe it, as I'm sure a lot of people still can't believe that. So just a wild move. I really it's hard for me to justify that trade if I'm the Mavericks. I know that they're trying to kind of say that, oh, Luka's, whatever's come out about their, issues with maybe his training and things like that. But it's just, as I was talking to my older brother last night, like, you think about Luka, he's not, obviously it's important to keep yourself in shape, but it's like you watch the way that he plays. I don't think that he's a guy that like necessarily needs to be the most athletic and most tip-top shape to be a top five player in the NBA, which he easily is. So just, I don't know, a bizarre move for the Mavericks, I think. Sure, they're trying to say that it's about defense, but it's like you're acquiring a 31-year-old Anthony Davis who's got a history of injuries. And it's like he's a good player when he's healthy. He's one of the best big men in the league easily, but it's just there's still something to this that seems odd and seems not to really make sense. But it happened, an insane trade, so we'll see how it works out for both teams. I mean, I think the Lakers obviously got a lot better, although it is going to be interesting to see what the Lakers look like from a def interior defense standpoint. They don't really have a whole lot of depth outside of Anthony Davis, so that will be kind of interesting. But hey, anytime you acquire a top five player in the NBA, you're going to get better. So we'll see what happens, and it'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure if Anthony Davis will be playing for the Mavericks when they visit the Garden on Thursday against the Celtics, but just a crazy trade that I think people are still kind of reeling from. And then there's also a trade Sunday night, three-way deal between the Spurs, the Bulls, and the Kings. The Spurs getting De'Aaron Fox, and the Kings getting Zach LaVine. It's very interesting to see De'Aaron Fox paired with Victor Wembanyama. I think Fox is scheduled to become a free agent, so could get very interesting. Zach LaVine going to Sacramento, reuniting with DeMar DeRozan, which was kind of interesting to me when I thought about it last night. But we'll see how those moves turn out. Devin Booker becoming the Suns' all-time leading scorer. And yeah, trade deadline is Thursday, so we'll see what other kinds of fireworks happen. But obviously, already off to a rocking start thanks to Saturday's trade in the middle of the night. So on the schedule tonight, obviously the Celtics and the Cavs at 7:30, Houston and Brooklyn, New York and Toronto also at 7:30, Dallas and Philadelphia at 7, Miami and Chicago at 8, the Lakers and the Clippers at 10, and the Pacers and the Trailblazers also at 10. Luka Doncic, I think, still out with that calf injury that he suffered on Christmas, so unclear whether he or when he would make his Lakers debut, but obviously that will be something that people stay updated on. Taking a look at the standings, Celtics are 5.5 back of first place in the East, so obviously game tonight and then the game at the end of February is going to be very important for the Celtics if they want to maintain hope for getting that number one seed. Knicks are in third place, two games behind the Celtics. Pacers are in fourth place, followed by the Bucks and the Heat. And then in the play-in spots, you have the Pistons, the Magic, the Hawks, and the Bulls, with the Sixers just a game back of Chicago for that final play-in spot. In the Western Conference, the Thunder lead the conference by six games over second place Memphis. Houston is in third, followed by Denver, the Lakers, and the Clippers. And then in the play-in spots, you have Minnesota, Dallas, Sacramento, and Phoenix, with Golden State even in that final play-in spot. So we'll take a look at some NHL notes. Jonathan Quick winning his 400th game, becoming the first U.S. goalie to win 400 games with the win for the Rangers over the weekend. Ryan Hartman gets a 10-game suspension for a hit on Tim Stützle earlier in the week. Largest NHL suspension since 2018. Take a look at the schedule. 14 games on the schedule tonight, including the Bruins and the Wild. Also at 7 o'clock, Columbus and Buffalo, Ottawa, Tampa Bay, New Jersey, Pittsburgh, Florida and Washington, Vegas and the Islanders at 7:30, Edmonton, St. Louis, Carolina, Winnipeg at 8 o'clock, Toronto and Calgary at 9, Philadelphia and Utah also at 9, and then Colorado and Vancouver, Detroit and Seattle at 10 o'clock, and then at 10:30, Montreal and San Jose, and Dallas and Anaheim. So we'll take a quick look at the standings in the wild card. Take a look at the wild card standings in the Eastern Conference. Florida leading the division with 67 points, followed by Toronto with 64 and Ottawa with 62. Ottawa's won 5 in a row, playing really good hockey. In the Metro Division, Washington leads the division, leads the East with 75 points, followed by Carolina with 68 and then New Jersey with 64. In the wild card spots, Detroit has the first wild card spot with 59 points. Columbus also has 59 points. They're in that second spot with Tampa Bay and the Bruins just a point back of that final playoff spot. In the Western Conference, Winnipeg leading the Central, the Western Conference, and the entire NHL with 77 points. Dallas in second with 69. And then Minnesota with 66 in third. In the Pacific, Edmonton and Vegas atop the Pacific with 68 points. Kings with 60. And then in the wild card spots, Avalanche with 64. And the Flames with 59. With Vancouver just 2 points back of that final wild card spot. Also, a major trade over the weekend. JT Miller getting reacquired by the Rangers, going from Vancouver to the Rangers. He scored twice in the Bruins Rangers game on Saturday. So, Rangers making a desperate attempt to kind of ignite their team. So, I think that's going to do it for NHL. Take a look at some MLB notes. Jack Flaherty returning to the Tigers on a $35 million deal. Max Scherzer signing a one-year deal with the Blue Jays last week. And yeah, spring training games begin February 20th. So we are right around the corner. So I think that's probably gonna do it for all sports this week. Had a lot to get through, but I think we're gonna get into our top five. So obviously, I said off the top this was gonna be a Celtics-themed top five. I figured with the trade deadline happening this week, and the Celtics probably not gonna be making a trade, probably won't be heavily involved in a trade. I figured it would be a good top five to go through some Celtics trades. So I decided that I would make this a little bit more specific and kind of take a look at more recent history. So our top five this week is top five Brad Stevens trades. So trades that we're looking at since Brad Stevens became the president of basketball operations in June of 2021. So that's kind of where our timeline starts. So I'm going to list the trades in terms of how important I think they were. So I think number five, we're going to start with number five. This is the very first trade that Brad Stevens made as president of basketball operations in June of 2021. So this was sending Kemba Walker, a 2021 first round pick, and a 2025 second round pick for the o to the Oklahoma City Thunder for Moses Brown, Al Horford, and a 2023 second round pick. And the Celtics also received a trade exception out of this. So, significant trade, obviously, the Celtics bringing back Al Horford, sending out Kemba Walker, who I think, kind of often injured during his time with the Celtics, had a couple playoff runs, but I think definitely pretty shrewd move, not a move that screams like, okay, this is a major, great trade at the time, because this was after 2021. The Celtics kind of not sure where they were going, after they moved on from Brad Stevens as the head coach. And then 10 days later, Ime Udoka gets hired. So I think just kind of an interesting deal to look at, but I think bringing in Al Horford, being still a major part of the Celtics right now, kind of made sense to include him in the top five. So that's trade number five. One last little note that I thought was interesting. The Celtics 2021 first round pick that they ended up trading turned into Alpi Şengün, who obviously plays for the Houston Rockets, I think one of the better up and coming players in the league. So I thought that was interesting that that first round pick the Celtics traded ended up obviously going to Houston at a later point, and then becoming Şengün is a pretty good player. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So number four, I'm gonna jump ahead here a little bit. The fourth, number four, I think. So this was the next year, July 9th, 2022, the next offseason. Celtics trading Malik Fitz, Juwan Morgan, Aaron Nesmith, Nick Stauskas, Daniel Theis, and a 2023 first round pick to the Pacers for Malcolm Brogdon. So I thought this was a pretty good trade at the time. The Celtics moving on from Nesmith, I think, guy that kind of never really found his groove here, didn't really hit his potential. But the Celtics bringing in Brogdon, he obviously was huge during that season. The Celtics made it to the NBA Finals, certainly had some, injury issues and shooting issues in the playoffs, but I thought that was a pretty good move at the time. So that was number four. Number three is a trade that happened later on that season in 2022. The Celtics, or no, I'm sorry, this was, no, this is the season before. So this is the season before. So this is that prior season, 2021, 2022. So this trade takes place on February 10th, 2022. Celtics actually made three trades this day. But the most significant, trading Romeo Langford, Josh Richardson, a 2022 first round pick, and a 2028 first round pick to the Spurs for Derek White. Obviously, a trade that I think actually may have confused some people at the time, that people weren't really sure what to make of Derek White. But, obviously he's been indispensable as a member of the Celtics and, has become one of their, I think, most important players. So I think definitely a trade that, a pretty shrewd trade, a trade that, obviously has worked out unbelievably well to this point. But I think these top three trades are not trades that are going to jump out at you to be like, oh my God, these are amazing moves, but they're really solid moves that worked and worked in different ways. And I know that Brogdon was only here for a year, but I think that was a good trade. Derek White, obviously, a great move. And then bringing back Al Horford was huge as well. So, now we kind of get into the major trades. I think number two for me is a trade the Celtics made prior to last season. Ironically, involves Malcolm Brogdon as well. So the Celtics trading Brogdon, Robert Williams, and a 2024 first round pick and a 2029 first round pick for Drew Holiday. Obviously, it was huge. Drew Holiday, a big piece of the Celtics championship run last season. I thought this was a move that was kind of hard to make. A lot of people, including myself, had high hopes for what Robert Williams here, but I think the opportunity to get Drew Holiday was just too difficult to pass up. I think especially with the Bucks getting Damian Lillard, prior to this, and the Celtics wanting to kind of bring in Drew to kind of be that final piece in terms of giving the Celtics a starting five that's, I think to this point one of the best in the league. So that was obviously a huge trade. And then number one is the three-way trade with the Grizzlies and the Wizards that involved bringing Kristaps Porzingis to Boston, sending Marcus Smart to Memphis. So this is the entire trade. The Celtics trading Danilo Gallinari, Mike Muscala, and Julian Phillips to the Wizards. The Celtics trading Marcus Smart to the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies trading Marcus Sasser and a first-round pick to the Celtics. Grizzlies trading Tyus Jones to the Wizards. And the Wizards trading Porzingis to the Celtics. So obviously a huge trade here, I think, was the most important piece for the Celtics to win the championship. I think not just Porzingis, although you could kind of argue that, okay, he wasn't available for a lot of their playoff run, but I think was a big reason why they were able to, dominate the regular season and get that number one seed. And, obviously was helpful during his time that he played in the playoffs, but, still obviously a really good trade made by Brad Stevens. Tough one to trade Marcus Smart, but I think it kind of made sense. It was a tough but necessary move that I think paid off for the Celtics and led to them, bringing in Banner 18. But, I think Brad Stevens has done a tremendous job as president of basketball operations, making a lot of trades that I think, at the time were kind of like, oh, I'm not sure about this. And they end up working out, and then kind of big swings as well with Holiday and Porzingis. But yeah, I thought that was a good top five. Obviously, we'd love to hear from the listeners if you can think of any other trades that you really liked, Brad Stevens or maybe a Danny Ainge trade. Maybe that's another top five that we do at a different time. But yeah, I think it's going to do it for the episode this week. Thanks for listening, and yeah, I'll be back with guest Friday later this week. Got a returning guest. We'll be talking Four Nations Face-Off, as that will start at the end of next week. Really exciting hockey tournament, international hockey tournament between USA, Canada, Sweden, and Finland. So that will be exciting. So we'll talk to you Friday.